Well, hello, Alex. Welcome to the Top Floor CEO series. It's my new podcast series talking about values and how businesses promote them, really, and still stay successful. So I'm really delighted you could join us. Radiant
Thank
Law
you for
looks a
having me.
fantastic example of what I'm trying to discover, really. But our audience won't know terribly much about you necessarily, so perhaps you could kick us off with just an indication of what you do and what the business does.
Okay. So I am unfortunately a lawyer by training. I used to be a real lawyer, and I worked at a bigger partner at a big American law firm and so on. I used to specialize in outsourcing and technology deals. So you'd kind of hire me to do the $100 million, $1 billion, whatever deal to put things in. And I had a Jerry Maguire moment in 2009 when I wrote a mission statement, not a memo, as a very junior partner to the executive committee of this now second largest law firm by revenue on the planet, suggesting we needed to do a little bit of innovation, look again at pricing and the billable hour and all of this stuff that I think everyone outside law is just aghast by, but yet continues. And so I had absolutely zero impact with this mission statement. They kind of politely ignored me, and unfortunately, I believe my own nonsense. So I set up Radiant Law in 2011. As started off really as a boutique law firm doing big deals, but fixed price only, no timesheets, and a strong sense that we should do contracting better. And now we specialize in kind of higher volume contracting for big companies. So you're a big company, you're buying a lot of stuff or selling a lot of stuff. We help you get those contracts over the line quickly. So we draft, negotiate, and get them signed, and we're working at pace, getting them done. So all we do is contracts. We also do remediation projects. So if you've got a law changes or signing changes, and you've got to update all your contracts, we'll do that. So that's what we do. And we're very, very focused on trying to make contracting better. So I'm a passionate believer that lawyers have made a right hash of this, and that we're fighting the wrong points and so on. And what we're really trying to do with contracts is not about contracts, it's about creating great commercial relationships.
Absolutely, yes.
Right? So we want to help companies build better relationships with their customers and suppliers. And we think the contracting process can be completely reimagined to make that a much more pleasant, if nothing else, borderline, dare I say, fun experience. And so that's kind of our big focus, is making contracting better so that we're helping create great relationships.
Well, that makes sense to me. I mean, you spend all this time going out to tender, trying to find the company that you feel you can work with to supply you or you for them, for you to supply to them. And then it gets bogged down in this turgid legal process about what could
Yeah,
go wrong
horrific.
in horrific process, which sows the seeds of doubts, all these
Yeah,
multiple
it's
clauses at the
trust
back end.
destroying. It's antithesis, and I fear it's not going to get better in a world where, you know, there's all this now excitement over AI and so on, and I fear that we are just rushing at yet more performative nonsense, when really relationships are created between humans, and we want to focus on the human relationships, even if companies act together, it's ultimately between people. And you know, companies are a kind of legal fiction. So that's our focus, is how can we make that whole process better, and focused on the things that matter. And there are a lot of data out there showing that, you know, lawyers spend their whole time worrying about things that might go wrong and how we deal with it, liability provisions, termination, indemnities. But what actually goes wrong in these deals is people don't know what they're buying, people don't know what they're selling,
It's
people
more
don't know what they're going to
definitional, isn't
pay,
it?
and that's where it goes wrong. And I think actually lawyers have got a lot to bring to the party. I'm very much not trying to get rid of lawyers. I believe that they bring a thoughtfulness and a mental, you know, rigor that's valuable, but it just needs to be directed at how can we make sure the deal is as workable as possible, as opposed to how can we tear strips off each other, you know, over hypothetical situations that we end up making more likely because we spent all our time focused on what goes wrong rather than how can we make it work.
Yes.
So, and sort of, so there you go.
You stop that commercial relationship. It's actually becomes a relationship between the two legal teams.
Not always good
talking one. About these clauses, and I'm not even talking to my customer anymore.
Yeah, and the business interest, everyone's pulling their hair out and takes it on. So,
but you've also got a new model. You use fixed pricing as well, don't you? So
timesheets, fixed pricing. I describe it as necessary, not sufficient. I don't think you can do anything interesting if you're charging on the basis that the more lawyering we do, that's adding more value. I don't believe that. I believe speed matters. And so we want to be incentivized to make it better. And so we've been fixed price from the very beginning. And I think that's been essential to get to where we've got to, but not sufficient in the sense of you still got to be purposeful, right? You still got to actually care about making it better rather than just perpetuating the nonsense.
So that's two elements then. So are you then within your price, you're saying we'll deconstruct your existing contracts? Because I guess you inherit some supply contracts already. Do you have to deconstruct that?
Our price, I think I read a book about this called Sign Here, and I think contracts should be short, clear, reasonable and relevant. And we should head to the middle ground and make them as usable as possible, as clear as possible, as simple as possible. And so there's always a journey on that route because everyone thinks they're reasonable. It's just that it's amazing how often they receive unreasonable contracts from the other side, right? So there's kind of massive, everyone's kidding themselves on what reasonable is, which I'd say is go to the middle ground and take care about both parties' objectives from day one, rather than, you know, battle back to where you know it's going to end up anyway. When we start working with clients, we kind of often rewrite stuff and do it, but it's also a journey that we need to help people on. And we have a lot of data and it becomes a lot easier when you say, look, this clause is causing a lot of negotiations and you keep conceding it. That can be an easier battle to win than going at the beginning and saying this is all nonsense, we're starting again. Because people are, a little pride.
You're right. No, try our way first.
You gotta take
them
on this journey.
Take them on a journey. Yes. Okay. So with that in mind, and you just mentioned very briefly your article, very interesting article on AI that I read through. Do you see that being one of the biggest challenges to the legal industry, or are there others that you're worried about coming out of 24?
So I've talked about fixing contracting, right, as one of our objectives of actually making it better. And I think there are two others. One is reinventing how legal services are delivered to add more value for the customer and create an organization where the team can thrive, because there's terrible burnout. It's not just in law, but there is terrible burnout in law. And it's kind of this kind of cycle of abusive behavior where young lawyers are paid a fortune and, in a lot of firms or bigger firms, and therefore get hazed ridiculously, and therefore they demand more money, and therefore everyone says work later. And I don't think that's a great long-term sustainable solution. So we're trying to also create a place where lawyers can thrive and the whole team can thrive. But the second point of improving legal services, I think the industry has been very supplier focused, and the in-house lawyers who hire us were all trained at large private practice firms, right? So it's become this kind of cycle of this is the way it is and always will be. And I think that doesn't need to be. We have to start with caring about what the customer actually needs.
You're right.
And, that's complicated. We work for large companies and banks and so on. So obviously that can become quite hard to figure out, all the different stakeholders and what their different needs are. But fundamentally, it's about at a company level, how can we get our deals done faster, manage risk appropriately, create great relationships with our counterparties. In the business user perspective, our mantra is fast, reliable, user-friendly, commercial, and improving, and so on.
This as a challenge then? Sorry, Alex, to cut
well,
across you
yeah,
there.
Back
I
to
mean,
AI
is this where you think
so
the
on.
Threat to legal is, that it's actually just becoming too laborious and too confrontational? Is that what you're saying the challenge is?
Yeah, I think the real challenge is we aren't focused enough on creating value and meeting needs. We're too stuck in our ways generally of like, this is how we've done and always will do. And so to my mind, it's definitely bionic lawyer, not robot lawyer. I'm not seeing any plausible pathway to replacing real reasoning with generative AI, for example. But I don't think there's enough reasoning going on and enough purpose anyway. So I think the real threat is we're not focused enough on creating value, and we're focused too much on just doing stuff, because we always have. And I think that that is not meeting the needs of the end client. And we've got an access to justice disaster going on in the kind of the personal world of law. But at the corporate level, it's, I don't think legal is adding nearly enough value, because you only create value by focusing on meeting the needs of the end user. I don't think people pay enough attention to that.
That's where the value is, isn't it? Yes, because they're contracting you to do this work.
So to my mind, AI, cool tool. I write a lot of code with it or whatever. Great, you know, whatever. But ultimately, it's about being purposeful.
Yes.
And if there's a threat to the industry and so on, it's because we're not purposeful enough and not focused on creating value. That's my reading of it. But then I would also add that when I wrote that mission statement on a memo back in the day in 2009, that company, that law firm, by ignoring me, went on to become the second largest law firm in the world, insanely more profitable than it was before, and it was wildly profitable before. So who's the idiot in this story, right? I mean, I'm objectively wrong in my analysis that we have to do this. If nothing else, but exhibited by the continuing growth in hourly rates, the continuing use of hourly rates, the continuing of the industry that hasn't really changed. It's just innovation theater to the extent that anything really has budged, right? Clients have generally tolerated it. That's the truth of it. Everyone may moan, but we're still buying those services from those kind of organizations, and they haven't really changed. So, you know, there's never-ending conversations about end of the legal industry, end of things, end of lawyers, end of whatever. And yeah, I don't see as much change. So although we sailed away from the fleet on our own path, we're the fastest on the planet, what we do, you know, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
You know, our insanely high customer satisfaction score, like 4.7 out of 5. And we turn
the contracts. World doesn't change beyond your little flotilla.
We turn contracts in half a day. The average legal team at a company is 30 days, you know, top quartile is 11 days. We're doing it consistently in half a day. The clients love it, who experience it. Business users are wild about it. But generally, life just carries on.
Yes.
We're kind of ignored. And that's just the way it is. I've given up any ambitions.
So what does that mean for you? What do you want to achieve in the next, say, 5 years then, in this, given that background?
Yeah. So we've always been interested in lean and, you know, from Toyota to kind of manufacturing originally methodology of, well, it's really a philosophy and a way of thinking about the world and creating value. Our great ambition now is to challenge in the next 5 years for a Shingo Prize. So Shingo is American university there in Utah codified lean effectively to turn it into a thing. And it's brilliant model, not the Shingo model. And they give out this prize, which has been described by Business Week as the Nobel Prize of Manufacturing, and they love that one.
Sounds grand.
For meeting this standard, this insanely high standard. And it's insanely high because it's about the behaviors throughout the organization of everyone, part of it, and how are they working and so on. And, you know, it's built on principles such as, you know, lead with humility and respect every individual and seek perfection and so on. So these kind of quite challenging profound principles. No professional services organization has ever challenged for a Shingo Prize, as far as I'm aware. No virtual organization has. I'm like, this is perfect for Radiant. So certainly no law firm. So that's my ambition, is to do that. And we measure.
So your flotilla is going to go further away over the
The
equator.
It's just like everyone's already kind of mentally written us off as the weirdos in the room, and I think it's just going to get worse and worse. But it kind of, the funny thing is, it works. So
it's an amazing ambition, and it begs the question for me: how will you bring your team with you on such a fairly lonely mission? I've got this vision of your little boat, your craft almost crossing the Atlantic like a Christopher Columbus.
Exactly. It's a challenge, right? But we've been building up for this for years. So you know, continuous improvement is kind of core at the firm, of everyone's part of making things better. We've always had a strong level of self-management and trying to distribute decision-making across the broader team and so on. We're not a partnership model. We run as a company, but not a regular hierarchical company and so on. We've always kind of pushed decision-making down and so on. So I think we have quite good foundations to build from. But yeah, you know, anyone who joins Radiant has come from another firm.
Yes.
And our team is mainly based in South Africa, the English law firm technically, but the main teams are in South Africa and Trinidad and all over in Asia Pacific this year probably. And so all of those team members come to us from a previous law firm as lawyers.
Yes.
And that's kind of deliberate, actually, because they kind of need to have experienced how awful law firms are to actually stay with us. Otherwise, the grass is always greener on the other side. We often catch people on the way out of the industry, utterly exasperated by how typical law firms work. And when they come to us, we do kind of a two-week induction process where I give them a little talk at the beginning called the Eyes Wide Open talk, where it's like, basically, as a lawyer, it's highly likely that you're going to be very attached from your sense of self-worth to what you know and what you've learned. And you've reached a stage in your career, because they're usually very junior, where you just about think you know what you're doing. And we're about to tell you that everything you've learned is wrong. So recognize that this is going to be an emotionally challenging period, but that everyone else has been through it and you'll get there. Just keep breathing and so on. And when we told you everything's different, you didn't really believe us, did you? But it is.
Yeah, that interview.
And so already we're in that kind of Marine boot camp kind of flipping people stage. So really with Shingo and so on, it's just more of, and at a higher level of intensity rather than a complete transformation of culture, which I think would be very hard, especially given the cohort we're working with, who are
very hard indeed, I would imagine. Yes.
Yeah. So we've already flipped people. And now
okay.
It's just
and
more.
So how, what's the sort of staff turnover then? Do you retain them?
We had it's pretty low right now. We had a problem at the end of the pandemic, like I think everyone did, you know, the great resignation and such, which is disappointing, but also understandable. And, you know, it's okay. I think always the challenge for us is to figure out how we can give people more and more opportunities and help them grow. And I feel that's a fundamental duty of the firm, to help grow our team. I think it's also highly unlikely that anyone will stay in a job for the rest of their career. So I'm very comfortable with the idea that people will leave. I just hope they stay long enough to learn a lot and take that with them. And I think Radiant is really I see it as kind of a finishing school for in-house lawyers. I think, you know, we're teaching them how to be exceptional contract lawyers, which is a lot of the work that happens in-house teams. And also we're teaching them how to make the world better and actually change things and improve things and solve problems and have an impact. And I think those are fundamentally valuable skills in,
well,
you know,
certainly
any organization.
They are. And they are your core values, aren't they?
Exactly.
Particularly, you've got two that stand out to me, improve everything and do the right thing. Now, I would imagine, given the nature of the work you're doing with very large corporate organizations with lots of money at stake, that doing the right thing must sometimes be a little bit edgy, a bit challenging.
I don't think so in our world. I mean, of course, you can get yourself in a mess, right? But we're very focused on helping our clients create great commercial relationships. And I think that can be done in a highly ethical way, but must be done in an ethical way. I think trust is foundational to everything. And our purpose is create great relationships. And that includes not only within the team, not only with the other side, but with the client, contributing back to the broader world and so on. And I think in all of those situations, it's very rare we have a, you know, worried about doing the right thing or conflict.
So have you ever been confronted with a client that is just unwilling to adopt anything more sort of collaborative approach and is quite is so confrontational that you struggle to work with them?
Yeah, it's a journey, but like ultimately I think there are companies that we can add more value to, and we are picky on who we work for. We don't work for all industries and so on. We are a
B Corp. So you have chosen to not work with some groups?
Yeah.
And is that
we've turned down huge companies as a result. I mean, like, you know, it doesn't cost you money. It doesn't really count, does it? It's like, it's all wallpaper, isn't it?
What sort of grounds, I mean, without naming the companies or the sectors, perhaps, but what sort of grounds would you have?
Like, we don't do fossil fuels, for example.
Okay.
Do their renewables arm. Very keen on that. But
right. Yeah, I'm with you.
But I don't want to be kind of holier than thou about it. That's just kind of a, you know, decisions we've made, and we're very kind of aligned at the management level around, you know, we care about these things, we care a lot about trying to make things better. So we don't act for everyone and so on, but I don't want to kind of dwell on that, because most companies, I think it's less a case of they're really aggressive and they can't do it, it's just no one's showing them a better way. And also, you know, that's a journey you go on with the client where we're both learning together and figuring out what actually works. And it's all very pragmatic, right? I mean, I think creating great relationships is good business. I think it's like, you know, it's just makes sense, right? At every level, because it's about how
they keep coming back and you renew.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't think it's so much that they're good companies and bad companies, as, you know, it's a journey that every company is going on to figure out how to do stuff better. And we want to be part of that journey. And of course, it helps with companies who are open to the possibility. But it's kind of self-selected group. People generally don't come to us, you know, pretty clear about what we do and so on, unless they're kind of up for making things better.
Yes, you're very clear on your website what you're going to offer. And So I guess some people just politely steer away because they're not ready for that. But you, you've gone down the B Corp route.
Mm.
What made you decide to do that?
So I first looked at the B Corp thing, I think, around 2016, and I slightly bounced off because it was just terribly wordy. Mm. it was like, but, and also the questions were slightly weird and so on. And I think I just wasn't ready.
Yes.
And came back to it in 2019 and kind of went through it again and went, we're kind of doing a lot of this. And I think I just had the right frame of mind then to look at it more as what we found it to be useful as is a structure that's reasonably, it's not complete and there's always flavor, but it's more broader than sometimes the highly fashionable aspects of, you know, DEI right now or whatever it is. It's sometimes like weird when we get asked in an RFP about a very specific thing, like this company really cares about global warming, this company really cares about DEI, but they don't really care about any broad picture of or whatever.
Yeah.
So it kind of looked at it again and went, yeah, actually, it's kind of quite a good framework. And, you know, okay, some of the questions don't really make full sense to me, but it doesn't matter. In the round, it kind of works. And it's work in progress, like everything. And so it became a way of saying, well, actually, this is quite nice to be kind of a bit more rigorous and structured. And so we decided to go ahead with it, and the process of going ahead with it was helpful as well, because there were a lot of conversations where we went, well, why don't we do that? It's all right. We don't, it doesn't matter. So it was a good nudge for us on a whole bunch of stuff fronts.
Any particular examples you can share?
But things like, you know, why aren't we doing these benefits for the team, or why aren't we, you know, that kind of stuff. And you're like, yeah, okay, we can do that. It's not a big deal. Like, why not? And so I think it was a helpful structure for us. And then, so we became certified in 2019. And And then it's been helpful for us since, because we basically just said, look, we've got a couple of metrics that we care about in this area. One is we're just going to crank up our B Corp score, you know, quarter on quarter. So we just set a growth rate and kind of cranking. So I think we had a score of about 88 something when we started, and we're now about 102. And so that again just makes us go back round it and go, well, why don't we do that? Or, you know, why, okay, you know, whatever. So I think it's kind of vaguely helpful like that. And then the other metric is we give like 10% of our operating profit to charity and so on. So then the conversation there is, where can we have the most impact and help them.
Yeah, I see the work you do in Trinidad and in South Africa.
And that's nice. And now we've got a team at the firm that's kind of pretty much leading that. And
so
And we plant a tree for every contract we do, although we don't do any printing, but clients love that. And I care about global warming, and not just trees are going to solve it. And right, but yeah, I think it matters a lot. And we do a lot in South Africa. We sponsor the last couple of years 1,000 people a year to get IT training with an amazing organization called Skillwise that's figured out how to do kind of computer training via computers. You can set someone from, you know, basically kind of flunked out of the education system, which a lot of people in South Africa have, and sit in front of a computer for 3 minutes. They basically teach themselves to use a computer, and it's incredible high success rates.
Yes.
And that's fabulous organization. So yeah, we do stuff like that, which is great.
Sounds very impressive. So back to sort of the essence of business, what are the big challenges that you've faced in the last few years, aside from COVID? What's the big challenges of keeping the business going and growing and getting more clients?
I think we've spent a lot of time, and I've been deep in trying to figure out how to build a great product and how to build a scalable system and very kind of system thinking, which is Shingo all about. And that's been very much where I've been immersed. I think the big focus now is on marketing and sales, because now we've built a scalable business, let's scale it up. That seems to be working. It's great and so on. But I think also it's a lot easier to sell something that is really good. You know, I mean, we've got a long way to go, but you know, people are like, kind of, you know, no one's ever seen a half day turnaround before on a consistent basis. Should we
You've
say?
Got some so metrics. That's
good. Yeah. And I think also it's just taken us a long time. It's always embarrassing to me how long it takes me to figure anything out. And like, what are we actually, needs are we meeting and so on? You kind of vaguely, I think, but we've got a lot more focused on, okay, actually, this is how we help and so on. So that's going to be the big focus for me personally over the next couple of years, which is great.
An enormous amount on your plate. There's a lot of stuff you're doing. You're navigating this this craft through uncharted waters. You're trying to, you know, keep the values, keep the team. You're multinational. So how do you manage your time?
It's a disaster zone. I'm hopeless at this. You know, a couple of years ago, I got an ADHD diagnosis, and I don't think anyone else was surprised, but I was like, oh my God, that kind of explains a lot, right? So I really struggle in being structured and consistent, and kind of CEOs, I think, are often, usually expected to be structured and consistent, right? So you have this kind of permanent challenge with the kind of owner, founder, manager type, right? There are a lot of people like me in that role, but then how does the organization evolve so that I'm not a hindrance on it, because I'm not consistent. And I'm never going to be truly consistent.
No, it's not in your nature.
It's not my nature. And I think the reason why I've been so focused on Shingo and so on is It's trying to create a structure to allow the organization to thrive without it all being top down, because I'm not going to be the right kind of leader for that. And it's kind of like, oh, wow, that's why I was doing this. but it's very positive, because it's about trying to literally empower the team and allow them to get on with it. And, you know, whilst having, you know, alignment around constantly a purpose and so on. So I'm not sure it's a bad answer, but I did go, wow, I really have been compensating for my failures.
I was going to say, it sounds like you've been almost forcing yourself into a pattern. You know, this, yeah, when you talk about systemizing, that seems to be, yeah, contrary to your nature almost.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's okay. But I think it's been quite challenging for the team, because, you know, people like, we cause organizational whiplash pretty fast. You know, I think someone at that term, right? So I'm trying to moderate my own puppy-like enthusiasm for lots of ideas and trying things and so on, right? It's like a work in progress.
So are you one of these bosses that comes in on a Monday morning and says, I've had this new bright idea over the weekend?
I'm awful like that. And I'm really, really trying to tone that down. I've got a great team around me that's kind of,
What do they do when you do this?
You know, they manage me, which is good, I think. I'm grateful for it. But it's kind of, you know, the organization needs to go as we grow on a pathway of not being the Alex show, right?
Yes.
But then on the other hand, you know, you have people like Daniel Priestley at Dent and so on. I absolutely agree with that in terms of marketing and sales, people do with the smaller organizations need to reason about what he calls a key person of influence. You know, they kind of, right, it doesn't have to be fully the Richard Branson show, but there is a thing where people they want to reason about an individual and so on. And so you can see why me spending the next few years focusing on marketing and sales, and, you know, I'm rewriting, updating the book, and, you know, yeah, talks and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, very much part of helping figure stuff out behind the scenes, but stepping away from it more and more is good for the organization on many levels. Right.
Right. Yes. That's an appropriate distraction for you. Yes.
But yeah. Yeah.
So with that in mind, this journey has been quite dramatic. I mean, 15 years of quite significant trying to buck the system, if you like.
There are easier ways of making money, you know.
And exactly that. Stay profitable and, you know, generate the money you want for your life and for everybody else. Absolutely. So as an employer, what would stand out as your biggest learnings that you would share with others in this sector?
I think the more the one can build systems, I think, you know, the E-Myth was the kind of the classic book on treat your business like it's a franchise, right? And
yes.
And focusing on process and structure and creating a broader sense system in which people can thrive and do good work and all the rest of it. That's, I think, been incredibly valuable for us. But there are so many different ways of running business, and I'm very wary about giving one, this is the one thing, do this, and you're sort of, it's like, that's the pathway. And I've kind of explained, I think, why I think I've been particularly attracted towards that pathway. But it's also under the heading of how do we create an organization where people can thrive. I think that a lot of that is about giving people a strong sense of agency and allowing them to do things and building an organization around collaboration rather than control or full autonomy. But, you know, that trying to find that sweet spot,
yeah,
is what we've been trying to do. And I think it's worked for us, but there are many ways of skinning this cat. And I'm cautious about saying do one thing.
No, but if you did have to give, if somebody came up to you and said, I'm working for this big law firm, kind of where you were in 2009, what would your advice be if they wanted to launch their own firm? Two or three things that you'd say.
So I don't think you can do anything fundamentally different in law without addressing the incentives problem. And Charlie Munger said, never ever think about anything else when you should be thinking about the power of incentives. And Charlie Munger, of course, was right. I was right about everything. So,
yes.
But that's necessarily not sufficient. So I don't think it is possible. I think it's very hard in a partnership structure to make significant changes, because I think the partners, the partnership structure is a system designed to maintain power and decision making in the hands of a smaller group who are fully incentivized to protect the system that put them in place of power. So I think there is a problem there with the partnership structure. So I think the first thing I have to do is think hard about how you're going to distribute power and so on, because, you know, I like to argue that it's easier to set up a law firm than fix one. So you know, early decisions are matter. I think the billable hour is deeply problematic. I don't think you can do anything interesting whilst keeping timesheets. A lot of people disagree with me, but I think it's a recipe for mediocrity at best. So I think those were foundationally important for us. Beyond that, it's like, just focus on what the customers need.
I think that's right? Got to be
everything else will sort itself out. You care about that. If you don't care about that, nothing else will matter.
Focus on what the customer needs. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Well, Alex, sadly we've come to our time, but I've really enjoyed that. I'm sure our listeners are going to get a lot of insight from what you've just said. Tremendous tour de force across the spectrum of the legal industry and what you're doing at Radiant. So thank you very much for your contribution to Top Floor.
Thank you, Colin. Been great to be on with you.